not a good day for the Mandalorian star Gina Carano. As a matter of fact, because, you know, it seems every day somebody else is being canceled because they stray from established orthodoxies, she had the temerity to suggest, or it's been implied anyway, that she's comparing Republicans today to Jews during the Holocaust. And while it may not be literal, the sense, though, that there may be something to conservatives being deplatformed, just as a certain identifiable group was during the Nuremberg laws of the 30s. You know, you identify and demonize the other, and then you tee off on them. So all that being said, by way of introduction, I wanted to get Dr. Gad Saad in here. He's noteworthy for being the host of the podcast The Saad Truth, and also author of the best-selling book The Parasitic Mind: How Infectious Ideas Are Killing Common Sense. Dr. Saad, it's a real pleasure to have you here on the Oakley Show in Toronto. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Great to be with you, sir.
Well, listen, let's just start with this one as sort of the launching pad. Another person gets deplatformed, loses their career effectively. It's no laughing matter. I mean, she's been dismissed from the Disney family who own the franchise. Maybe you can help me here. How do we, who value our freedoms, uproot or even derail cancel culture that's so insidious now and is metastasizing in all aspects of popular culture?
Well, the reflex to cancel people has to be laughed out of the public arena. In other words, that reflex has to become something that only cretins engage in, whereas currently the intelligentsia view that as a laudable idea, right? We're only protecting people's feelings. We're only protecting marginalized groups. So what they do is they take a fascistic impulse and they cloak it in the robe of, you know, progressive utopia, and therefore they're allowed to do it. Now, in a sense, I'm an ideal person to speak about these issues because I grew up in Lebanon and escaped the Lebanese civil war as a Lebanese Jew. So I know what genocidal hate. As a Jewish person, I understand the sensitivity of drawing analogies with the Holocaust. But I can tell you that as a free speech absolutist, I support the right, for example, of Holocaust deniers to deny the most grotesque reality that the world has arguably ever seen. So the idea in a free society is that we expect racists, idiots, imbeciles, misinformed people to exist within the public sphere. We don't cancel them. Rather, we defeat them with better ideas. So until we get rid of that reflex to shut down people, we're heading on a slow train ride to hell.
Right, and defeating them by better ideas in, let's say, the arena of democratic persuasion. But that arena is now being closed off to a lot of people.
Exactly. So, look, I've been warning about this for well over two decades because in my own scientific research, I basically apply evolutionary biology and evolution psychology to study consumer behavior. And in the pursuit of that scientific objective, I often, for example, study sex differences. Well, guess what? It is now part of forbidden knowledge to study sex differences, or at least to have findings that might be contrary to the acceptable orthodoxy. So if you find that women are superior to men on some cognitive task, bravo, Dr. Saad, you're a hero. On the other hand, if I had the misfortune of finding that men were better on a task, well, then I better quickly hide those results because otherwise I'm indistinguishable from Himmler. So the veracity of scientific findings are no longer judged on whether they are veridical or not. They are judged on whether they either violate or not forbidden knowledge. That's a grotesque impulse, and I escaped societies where that was considered a good idea to regrettably find that 40, 50 years after I left the Middle East, we're now enshrining these fascistic ideas as progressive.
Again, Dr. Gad Saad, writer of the book, The Parasitic Mind, How Infectious Ideas Are Killing Common Sense. You wrote that book. I'm kind of curious, who wrote this book, this playbook that has us all either subscribing to this received wisdom or we're somehow heretics? I mean, you wander in the halls of academia there in Concordia. You've been at Cornell and other prestigious institutions. Do they need to be fumigated because are they the incubators of these kinds of schools of thought?
I love your word fumigation because that's exactly what needs to happen. So I often argue, as I do in the book, that sure, we now have a COVID pandemic, but there's been a much more serious pandemic going on. It's a pandemic of the human mind. We've had 40, 50 years of idea pathogens, all of which were promulgated by imbecilic professors, because I always remind people, it takes professors and intellectuals to come up with really dumb, reprehensible ideas. And so each of these idea pathogens, and I don't know if we have time to go over any of them, but there are many, for example, postmodernism, radical, militant feminism, social constructivism. All of these ideas were originally spawned on university campuses, but eventually they make their way downstream to every nook and cranny of society, to our HR departments, to our military, to our granting agencies, to politics. And eventually, people lose their ability to engage in sense-making. Nothing makes sense anymore. Up is down, left is right. And so unless good people rise up against this nonsense, your children and mine and our grandchildren will be raised in an environment where literally it's complete intellectual terrorism.
I guess that was my central or initial question. For good people to rise up, what's it going to take? I mean, a lot of this is spawned by social media, you know, and you've got mobs, like-minded groupthink and all the rest. They're highly mobilized. How do you countervail that?
So there are many ways. One that I think maybe it will stick in people's mind. In Chapter 8 of The Parasitic Mind, I implore people to activate their inner honey badger. The reason why I use that imagery is because the honey badger, despite the fact that it is the size of a small dog, can withstand the attack of six adult lions. How could a small, something the size of a small dog be able to do that? Well, it does that because it is extraordinarily ferocious and fierce. Now, how do I link that to what we're talking about? If you have principles that are worthy of defense, that you can clearly articulate and justify why you hold those positions, then you need to be an ideological honey badger. So the reason that I'm able to survive in the cesspool of academia and in social media is because if you come after me, you better not miss, because I'm going to come after you. I'm going to come after your ancestors. I'm going to come after your dead ancestors. Now, I don't mean that literally. I mean that figuratively. But what I mean is I'm so convinced of my positions that you better cross your T's and dot your I's, or else I'm taking you to the cleaners. And so people have to develop that reflex. Not everyone is as good as in articulating these positions, but if you keep subcontracting your voice to others, then we will lose. If you develop the testicular fortitude to speak out, we will win by next Tuesday.
Well, all right. That's a rather rapid timeline, so it gives us heart a little degree of optimism. But, not everybody has access to the soapbox, and the media is now tightly controlled, as you've seen, social media. Some of the things that are going on with big tech, it's audacious and it's outrageous, but is the answer alternative platforms? I'm just talking from a grassroots sure. level. How do people express themselves?
Social media, you're right, is ideally suited for people who might have the large soapbox, but this is trench warfare. So if somebody says something on your Facebook personal Facebook page that you disagree with, engage them politely. I'm not saying that you should be obnoxious and impolite and insulting. But in other words, use every opportunity to activate your voice to good use. If you're sitting at a pub and someone says something insane like, no, it's not women who menstruate, it's people who menstruate, challenge them on that. Why do you say that? What's the proof for that? So listen, I had one of my kids' teachers, I think she was a science teacher, she had a thing of BLM as part of her pedagogic profile. I wrote to the principal, and I didn't write because I'm a well-known professor. I wrote as a concerned parent, and I said it is inappropriate for the teacher to be espousing political positions when speaking to elementary school teachers. And oh, by the way, here are some positions that BLM espouses. Do you support that? Well, very quickly, that photo was taken off of her profile. So in other words, while we don't all have the soapbox to reach millions of people, we all can affect change within the small sphere of influence of our daily lives. So use it.
Again, with Dr. Gad Saad, the book is The Parasitic Mind, How Infectious Ideas Are Killing Common Sense. Well, here's another example, common sense. The NBA reinstated the national anthem for all teams because some were actually deciding not to play it, just as I guess a symbolic thing as much as anything. Mark Cuban, who was the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, was saying, the national anthem doesn't speak to all communities, so we're just going to shelve it and leave it. He since reversed yesterday because the NBA forced him to. You opine on that matter amongst many others, those who decry the national anthem. What is their problem, as you see it?
Well, because they're being infected by the idea pathogens of associated with wokeness, right? So precisely because they don't have a strong sense of whether it be individual identity or collective identity, if someone goes boo, they recoil in their fetal position and start crying and apologizing. So think about Drew Brees. Drew Brees is sufficiently courageous to have 350-pound mountains of men approaching him to annihilate him, yet he's not sufficiently courageous to say, hey, I think it's okay to stand and put my hand on my heart when it's the national anthem. I don't know if you remember the story, but sure. A few months ago, he had said, you know, he had come out in defense of the national anthem, but then when a lot of his colleagues or, you know, co-players were offended in the dressing room, then he started to grovel. So he apologized once, then he apologized a second time, then his wife apologized. So imagine how diseased a society is when a role model like Drew Brees has to engage in multiple apologies for having stated that he loves and respects the national anthem. That's not a honey badger. That's a coward who doesn't have first principles.
Dr. Saad, I've got to ask you finally, because it really piqued my curiosity, and I found this a delicious attack on Seth Rogen, the comedic actor, because you critique virtue signaling in members of the privileged class. So tell me about this. What's that war of words?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Well, basically what happened is I had put out a clip where I was attacking the hypocrisy of the ruling elite class. And then someone tagged Seth Rogen as a manifestation of that, and I agreed, and I wrote, yes, he is a perfect example of that. So Seth Rogen decided to then attack me. Well, that was an error. And so I then basically annihilated him. I took him from being a three-dimensional entity to a two-dimensional entity. I didn't do it to be mean, but I did it because I was so rightfully indignant about someone pretending that they are a socialist while wearing a Che Guevara t-shirt in Malibu while being worth $80 million, having benefited from the most capitalistic industry in the most capitalistic country, but yet he, in an empty, vacuous manner, engages in woke, signaling of socialism. I just despise that type of hypocrisy, and so I let him have it, and good for him that he didn't come back after me, because as I said, the more you come after me, the more I'm emboldened and angry. So he walked away like the good little punk that he is.
You are the quintessential honey badger right there. It's been a real delight. I look forward to reading the book entitled The Parasitic Mind, How Infectious Ideas Are Killing Common Sense. Dr. Gad Saad, and also the podcast, by the way, The Saad Truth, which you deliver in spades. Really been a pleasure. I look forward to doing it in the future.
Likewise. Thank you, sir.
This is the John Oakley Show podcast.
Another esteemed guest has joined us on the line. Dr. Gad Saad is back with us, author of The Parasitic Mind, How Infectious Ideas Are Killing Common Sense. Dr. Saad, good to have you back on the Oakley Show. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me back. Cheers.
Yeah, listen, I'm just kind of curious about which sacred cows you've been disemboweling lately. I mean, did you give any consideration to last night's interview at all insofar as it informs popular culture?
Oh, well, clearly you're not following me as closely as you should, because I released earlier this morning a clip regarding exactly what you mentioned, the Oprah with Princess Harry and Princess Meghan. This is why I referred to on International Women's Day, I was honoring three female heroes of mine, Harry, Meghan, and Oprah. So you might want to watch it on my YouTube channel.
Yeah, you know, I wish I had the time to do it, so my bad. But listen, I, in some ways, I can see this is going to be incendiary insofar as on International Women's Day, no less. Have you been excoriated for being misogynistic or sexist in that regard, labeling Harry a woman?
No, I have not. Not that I'm aware of. But a few days ago, someone wanted to have me canceled from my university because I criticized AOC, you know, Ocasio-Cortez. I criticized her position on the minimum wage law, and I quoted or cited the economist Thomas Sowell. And apparently, simply by proposing an alternate viewpoint, that was sufficient for me to be canceled from my professorship.
Wow. You know, I wanted to get around to that. But before we do, I'm just curious to get more of your take on last night's interview, what you found particularly egregious. I mean, you're citing that Harry perhaps was a little too pusillanimous. But tell me why you took umbrage with that interview last night, or the tone of it, or the thrust of it. What was your...
So I'll contextualize it as follows. In my satirical clip, I basically said, listen, Yazidi women, stop whining with your gang rapes by ISIS. Hey, Rwandan genocide victims. Hey, myself, who went through the Lebanese civil war, a true victim is what Meghan and Harry went through. Now, the reason I say this is because, you know, life is about contextualizing. When you live a world that is defined as what privilege is, you really don't have much affordances to get on Oprah to whine about how tough it was on you. In other words, the extent to which they are deaf to, you know, what's happening around the world, all the people who've lost their jobs, who've lost all of their businesses, and they get on to whine about this, is grotesque. It's a form of orgiastic faux victimology that I find repugnant.
What about the race card being invoked here? Is that now becoming weaponized to the point that, you know, you make that accusation and it's like, I don't know if there's any legitimate response to it. Like the royals now have to handle this hot potato.
There's always going to be some accusation, whether it be you're homophobic, you're transphobic, you're racist, you're misogynistic. I appeared in front of the Canadian Senate in 2017 with Jordan Peterson to discuss Bill C-16. I provided some witness scientific arguments regarding why there might be a slippery slope argument. One of the liberal senators accused me of being pro-genocide. Someone who escaped execution in Lebanon because they're Lebanese Jew was accused of being pro-genocide. So all of these accusations and insults are locked and loaded and ready to be deployed. It's grotesque.
Again, with Dr. Gad Saad, his book is The Parasitic Mind, How Infectious Ideas Are Killing Common Sense. So what you alluded to earlier, that people wanted you canceled from academia at Concordia. No, it was interesting and instructive. Last week we had on a Professor Eric Kaufman, who's just done what I think is a pretty comprehensive study of universities in the UK, the USA, and Canada. In Canada's case, 40 of the top universities, where he asked the professors in the liberal arts or humanities courses to self-identify where they might place themselves on the political spectrum. And his finding was rather, I guess, arresting, even for those of us who might have suspected. 73% of academics in Canada describe themselves, self-described, as left-leaning, and only 4%, these are in academia, 4% are conservative. The weighting is so disproportionate as to suggest that anybody who thinks as you do is prone to being canceled, especially by those under 40, he said. They have no qualms about seeing professors canceled from, and these are non-tenured, obviously, who knows, but they want them out of the faculty because they think you're toxic.
Look, 73-4 is actually not too lopsided. There are disciplines in the United States, and I cite all these stats in The Parasitic Mind, where it's 44-1 ratio. So sociology and all the other grievance studies programs. So, you know, I'm being somewhat facetious, but to say 73-4 is almost good news. Just before coming on your show, I opened up my emails and I received an email from a oncologist radiologist who comes originally from the Middle East, who was astonished at the self-flagellation that he has to do in terms of wokeness in medicine. And he felt very ashamed because he wasn't fighting against it, but felt guilty. And so he wanted to sort of confess his sins to me. I receive 100 such emails a day. Most professors are afraid of their shadows. They're afraid to enunciate a single syllable that might be taken out of context or that might get them canceled. This is not a way for an enlightened society to function.
Well, then tell us, Dr. Saad, I mean, can diversity of opinion or ideology ever be rebalanced, or has that ship sailed?
I think it can be rebalanced pretty quickly if really the silent majority speak up in unison. As I always remind people, the reason why these dreadful idea pathogens continue to proliferate is because most people are simply too afraid to speak out. But if we all speak out in unison, in our own ways, we don't all have to have big radio shows or big professorial platforms to speak, but if we all combat in our small or large ways, we will resolve this problem by next Tuesday. If we don't, it'll be a slow, long train ride to hell.
But the modes of communication are likewise slanted when you've got big tech and how they tend to massage or even censor or edit. We've seen traditional media playing that game as well. How do we get around them? What's the workaround?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of torn about the whole social media thing, because the libertarian side of me wants to say, no, don't let the government intervene. But the pragmatic side says that you can't have companies that have more power over what we consume in our brains than all dictators combined throughout human history. They can't have such unfettered ability to silence us. So my suspicion is that eventually governments are going to have to step in and rein in those maniacs.
Well, we've got the government stepping in. The Liberal government is looking to propose redefining hate in the era of social media, especially, and they're looking to revive Section 13 of the Human Rights Code, which was defeated about a dozen years ago because it was considered to be too subjective. So aren't we going down that road again? I mean, if we've got a regulator defining hate, it could just be a matter of opinion.
Yeah, so certainly that would not be an example of a governmental intervention that I would support, precisely for the reasons that you're enunciating. Anything could be construed as hate if it disagrees with my position, right? So if I wish to criticize some tenets of a religion because I think that that tenet is contrary to secular enlightened values, then that could be construed as hate. I give an example in The Parasitic Mind of Geert Wilders, who is a somewhat incendiary Dutch parliamentarian. He was taken to court in the Netherlands in 2010 because he had dared to criticize Islam. Then he wanted to prove to the court, to the magistrate, that what he had said was true. And please listen to what they responded. It doesn't matter what you say is true or not if it is illegal. So truth is not a defense against hate speech. Once you go down that Orwellian trap, you're finished.
Let me ask you finally, I mean, it's a big story, and it deals with popular culture, this whole Dr. Seuss imbroglio, where I guess it's the company's prerogative if they want to pull the books or discontinue. It's not necessarily canceled, but it's the impetus behind this, that people are looking for ways to scrub pop culture. Are you finding that that's endemic now in terms of the left who have gone on this fatwa?
Yeah, absolutely. And let me draw you a scientific analogy. In evolutionary medicine, there's something called the hygiene hypothesis, which basically argues that if you want children to grow up without respiratory problems, you need to raise them actually in environments where they are exposed to pollutants. Children who grow up on farms or with pets and with dander actually do better on things like asthma because their immune system has been activated to respond to this. Well, imagine now if we, instead of talking about asthma, we talk about critical thinking abilities. My brain has to be anti-fragile. It has to be exposed to stressors for me to function optimally. Once you scrub any possibility of any offense anywhere from my worldview, then you're creating a very weak and pathetic person. So all of this cancel stuff is literally anti-Darwinian and anti-evolutionary medicine.
Thanks for listening to the John Oakley Show podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you get your on-demand audio.